there is a thing that happens in a lot of ayahuasca circles where everyone's trying to out profound each other with, like, you know, how much they got from it. And last night was incredible. And I'm not mad at them having an incredible experience. I'm just aware that it tends to be a little subtly competitive, even if people don't realize it.
So the last thing that I made with my butcher box shipment was aloo chicken, and it turned out really well. One of my favorite things is to get the shipment and then open up the New York Times cooking app and see what I want to create over the next few weeks. It helps my creative cooking chops, and both my wife and I really enjoy it. ButcherBox offers a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing price, plus they have exclusive member deals, and they also have their own recipes, although I am preferential to the New York Times app, but that's just me. And you can sign up today at butcherbox.com/conspirituality and get their special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. So for that year, you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/conspirituality and use code conspirituality to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Everyone, welcome to Conspirituality, where we investigate the intersection of conspiracy theories and spiritual influence to uncover cults, pseudoscience, and authoritarian extremism. I'm Derek Barris.
I'm Matthew Remsky.
I'm Julian Walker.
And I'm Neil Brennan. For some reason, I'm here also.
You are here.
Mm-hmm. Welcome.
We at Conspirituality are on Instagram and Threads. I believe Neil is as well. But we are at Conspirituality Pod. And you can access all of our episodes ad-free, plus our Monday bonus episodes on Patreon, or just our Monday bonus episodes via Apple subscriptions. As independent media creators, we appreciate your support.
Conspirituality 203. Is this a joke? With Neil Brennan.
Welcome, Neil. I want to do a little bit of an intro here for the half dozen or so listeners who may not know you. You're a stand-up comedian, comedy writer. You've been at it for decades. And your skill set tracks back to being a kid because you've explored in two Netflix specials so far, Three Mics and Blocks, that there was a lot to overcome while growing up as the youngest of 10 in a Catholic family, with an extremely unwell father, and being funny helped a lot. And so somehow you've made discussions of family pain and consequent mental health difficulties more tolerable with jokes. And you sometimes do the same thing with culture war stuff. But for me, it's more than jokes, really, because you've also built a few storytelling innovations into the scene. Like in Three Mics, you bounce between these discontinuous voices in a way that mirrors the internal splits that I think many of us are familiar with, if we even can't describe them. But you're here today because, well, you just did Rogan and our people thought it was, you know, time to call you up to the big leagues for some real questions.
Thanks for the opportunity. Thank you for this, opportunity.
Let's see what he's got. You also have a new Netflix special out, which is very, very good. Crazy good. So welcome, Neil. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. I truth be told, I volunteered to be on the podcast because I listen, and I often, like probably many of your listeners, agree And then sometimes I'm yelling at you guys from my car.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You know, that's what free speech is all about, guys.
You got it.
Your special touches upon many things we cover on the podcast. Obviously, if you're a listener, you know that. You know, during your special, you mentioned binging Stranger Things. So I felt seen because I didn't find it until recently. But then there are other topics like ayahuasca and something that is also deeply, intensely personal. Although, to be honest, it didn't invoke metaphysical feelings in me. So I think we have some differences there. But I want to hear a bit about your ayahuasca experience to start, and then we can kind of navigate from there.
It's a good entry point because, so good journalism, guys. Good. I do production as well. You're doing a great job in terms of formatting. Now, ayahuasca is a great starting point for all of us because that's part of what got me interested in the conspirituality world. Ayahuasca has been incredibly helpful to me, right? Literally changed my life. I've done it 15 or so times over the last 4 years. I literally experienced it, what I believe is a God connection. Great. Got me off antidepressants. Great. Within that, I have found a lot of what you guys are talking about on the pod, which is just snake oil salespeople and unfalsifiable things that people traffic in, energy healing and, you know, selling life coaching and just kind of preying on people. And I've had disagreements with people in the community about what they're doing and how they're doing it. And is it ethical? So that's why I love the podcast so much. And I would also like to say about ayahuasca and this world is I have experienced things that cannot be explained by science or medicine. I believe that's my belief. And again, I don't say that will happen for you or it happens for everyone or it happens often, or I'm just saying my understanding of it is, when I'm on ayahuasca and I'm shaking in a way that I can't explain, no one else can explain. And then a few months later, I'm with a female friend. I start shaking for no reason. And she goes, oh, I should have told you I opened my Reiki channel. Oh, well, that seems like scientific. That's a double blind study, I believe I was just a part of, involuntarily. So
yeah.
Like most people about many things, I'm of two minds about it. It is magical, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe these people are snake oil salespeople, but it's pretty effective snake oil, I gotta say. That would be my and the other thing that is that on a lot of issues, I am the Supreme Court. I can go 5-4. I can go 7-2. I can, you know what I mean? Like the rulings that my feelings about so many things are not like unanimous, overwhelming. I think that's one of the many things that's disappeared over the last 10 years is people always say nuance. It is nuance, but it's also just like a slim majority within myself and a shifting majority within myself based on the latest information.
I think that's good that you're able to do that. You know, Derek and I can both really relate to the power of psychedelics. Matthew, not as much, but I've done pretty much all of them.
Square. Matthew's a square. Go on.
Matthew's a square.
We can discuss that later, but Julian, go on. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've done pretty much all of them. I actually relate to everything you're talking about. I'm familiar with the types of experiences you're describing, the shaking stuff, and then it showing up later and, you know, all the different sort of connections there. I've experienced the sky talking directly to me right after communing with these two trees who were kind of looking directly into my soul. And I've had moments that at the time seemed to only be explainable as paranormal or mystical. Mm-hmm. You've also talked about absolutely terrifying experiences, as well as difficulties with integration. And I've definitely been there too. I ended up listening to your Rogan appearance from last week. And you describe your psychedelic odyssey in with a sort of extra layer of how really harrowing it was. And you said you even considered suicide as an option to get this unbearable reintegration experience after smoking DMT to stop. It was too much. And I know that was a while ago. It sounds like you've been able to disentangle the destabilizing aspects of that almost psychotic intrusion from the benefits that you also report in terms of substantial relief from depression, anxiety, resentment. So here's my question. How are you doing like right now in the aftermath of being even more open about those experiences on the biggest platform in the world?
As you guys may have experienced doing a podcast, is you don't know these things of like, you're on this huge platform or you're, does it feel like, it doesn't really feel like, and you don't, you guys don't get an inch taller when you gain 10,000 listeners.
Yeah.
Nothing really different happens. So, and I experienced that on Chappelle's show where it was the highest selling DVD in the history of TV on some statistic like that. And it's like, how's it feel? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Felt like it did a year ago. I just, whatever, more, I guess more people acknowledge it.
So it doesn't feel like exposing in a highly sensitive way to you.
You know, last year I did Joe, or a year and a half ago I did Rogan, and I spoke about all that stuff even more in more detail. And I had you know, what's nice, I think is nice, is people reach out. People that have had the same experience. They say, like, you know, it becomes a bit of a 12-step group where it is like sharing experience, strength, and hope. There is something comforting about like, that guy also had a bad experience, because you feel kind of stigmatized if you had a bad experience, because it becomes like a mean girl's kind of like, we all met God and we're all healed and we're all in alignment and you're not. And it's like, this seems like not the point. But it does that human thing of feeling like FOMO or even shame about not having, you know, this profound experience. There is a thing that happens in a lot of ayahuasca circles where everyone's trying to out profound each other with, like, you know, how much they got from it. And last night was incredible. And I'm not mad at them having an incredible experience. I'm just aware that it tends to be a little subtly competitive, even if people don't realize it.
Yeah. And you talk about being the one in that circle saying, the universe is about to end and I'm not okay. That's my share.
Yeah. 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 Like, this is bad. Mm-hmm. And then the next guy said, like, I'm balancing. And I was like, balancing? Bro, it's all over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, this is the end. So yeah, I've had very, very harrowing experiences in that realm. But also what it did to my spirit, my Netflix special is twice as popular as my other ones. Mm-hmm. This one, the jokes might be a little better. There is no emotion, which people appreciate, because no, people don't go to a comedy show for goddamn feelings. Mm. There's a noticeable difference. I'm better at comedy. Mm-hmm. I know that there is a danger in saying it's because of ayahuasca and DMT, both beautiful and harrowing experiences. Cause I don't, my worry with all of this sort of Wild West, you know, psilocybin, ayahuasca, MDMA stuff is there aren't enough people that are equipped to even understand what's happening. Mm-hmm. Like, in my experience, I didn't really have anyone to turn to.
Well, that's what I was actually about to ask you. In the depths of what you describe, where it was so incredibly unbearable, were you all alone in that? Did you have no one to turn to?
Yeah. I mean, basically, as I understood it, the people who had administered it, no one really has much aftercare. They say they do. In my experience... Mm-hmm. People talk a big game about I'm here, text me whenever, email us, we'll get back to, and it just becomes like any customer service department, you know, where it's just like, we're backlog, bro.
Yeah.
I think that there's a part of it, and you see this sometimes on like ayahuasca Reddit threads, there's a part of it where people like the shamans or whatever, they're a little embarrassed that you had a bad experience, or they try to talk you out of it. Mm. No, you need to, or you're unresolved, or you're not integrating properly, or it's the fault is with the, you know, with the customer. And not like there's anything that they could directly do.
Yeah.
But like when I did DMT, I believe I was overserved. in my experience, sometimes people are very judicious about it. I've sat with maybe four different people for ayahuasca. And with DMT, I think there is such an excitement mm-hmm. about this sort of panacea that everyone's excited. Like, you can't take too much. Mm-hmm. It's so great, you can't take too much. And it's like, no, I think I took too much.
Did you smoke it or intravenously?
Smoked it. There was also a thing that I found out in a white paper afterward that my friend looked up because they have like a GitHub account, one of those things. A white paper where it's like 70% of people who smoke DMT have a reactivation. Mm. It's lower for intravenous. Mm-hmm. So something like that. Like, I've never heard that before.
That wasn't part of the marketing shtick.
No. Well, that's the thing, is it's all word of mouth. Mm-hmm. So no one's going to say it's great, but no one's going to say you got to listen to this new album. It's got five crappy songs. It's got six of them. They'll just go, it's six of the best songs, or like, this is the best album I've ever heard. Because of the six songs, it crosses the Rubicon into the greatest album ever. They don't say like there's five kind of garbage songs. And there's a bit of it, that might not be a great analogy, but like no one wants to be a scold with this stuff.
Yeah. And it's the tricky part about it being spiritualized psychological work, right? There's a sheen on it. That is that this is the ultimate truth of the universe. This is you getting in touch with plant teachers that are going to, you know, illuminate and enlighten you. So touching on any of the shadowy stuff is, I think, sometimes.
Well, yeah, it is similar to, you know, why the church got away with molestation, the Catholic Church, not all of them, just Catholic. It got away with molestations because you feel like you're questioning God. You're not just saying this guy did this to me. You're saying this whole God thing, it calls the whole thing into question. Mm-hmm. And there's going to have to be, for it to be effective, some sort of way to be honest about it.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that you tied those two things together, because I think you've given about 10 of the reasons why I'm actually a square. And it really comes down to, with regard to psychedelics, mm-hmm. I haven't done any of that stuff. And there's a couple of things. I know you grew up Catholic as well, but for me, mm-hmm. that very sort of scripted, spiritualized experience, I think, gave me a lot of concern around deception and hypocrisy and competence. And so if I'm going to go into a group scenario, I have to be extremely sort of clear that I'm not going to be fucked with. And I think the chances of being fucked with are pretty high. But I think there's also something really personal about shying away from it, which is that, like, my mind, my brain, the way in which I write and construct things compulsively is really my safety valve. It's my protective mechanism. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what would be shattered. And then, you know, everybody and their brother is going to tell me, well, that might be good for you, Matthew. And I just can't go there. I'm just not willing to put it down.
You're afraid of the ego death.
Yeah. I've had ego death, but I like bringing it on myself at the time of my own choosing. Right.
Yeah. I was joking.
You know, but I want to say, yeah. Neil, that like you open this show by saying, I have terrible news for all of you. I'm feeling pretty great. And, you know, I appreciate hearing that it feels like it's flowing better for you now in your stand-up work. But it reminded me of this dear writer friend that I had who suffered from depression for a long time. And
doesn't sound like a writer. Go on.
Well, he said to me, and it's haunted me ever since, he said, you know, if therapy really works for me, I may not be an interesting person anymore. Like, I may not have anything to write about.
I think that's kind of a rephrase of what you just said a minute ago.
Yeah, it is.
Isn't that sort of what you're getting at?
A little bit.
Again, all I can tell you is my experience, because there aren't very many cases of someone who healed themselves of being an artist historically. Right. I think it's kind of a false narrative. If you know enough writers, yeah. artists, comedians, directors, actors, they're fucking lying.
Yeah.
And they don't want to do the work, just like anybody. And by the work, I mean any sort of emotional excavation, because it's hard and it's a pain in the ass. So you go, I can't, man, because I don't want to lose all this. I did the work with, and a friend of mine actually said at the beginning, the first time we did ayahuasca, he goes, "Hey, are we going to be able to be capitalists after this?" And it's a similar thing where what's going to happen to me? And a part of me was like, well, I'm only doing comedy to be happy. So if I can skip that step, the comedy's great and I'm skilled at it. But at the same time, it's like, it's also very hard and very arduous and embarrassing. And on a pretty daily basis, it's like, it's so hard that it's just like, you're constantly getting winded. You know, you're constantly getting the wind knocked out of you. My point is, like I said, I know more writers, artists, comedians, directors, actors, et cetera, who have musicians who have died from not healing themselves than I do those that try to heal themselves and stop being good. Because I'm an object lesson or an example of I'm healthier and I'm funnier. So it's another piece of bad news. I'm healthier and I'm funnier because a lot of the thing that was holding me back was like, I didn't seem like I was having fun. And on Three Mics and Blocks, it's like, I seem pretty bummed out. So if I have the same basic reflexes and skill set, I wrote all those jokes or a lot of the jokes from Crazy Good post ayahuasca. I think all of them post ayahuasca, post DMT. I've also written great jokes, not on before antidepressants. I wrote Chappelle Show on antidepressants. That's Zoloft, baby. Like, I think it's just me. Do you know what I mean? I have the reflexes. Like, I wrote a joke the other day that Joe Biden looks like a young mummy. Now, that's just a reflex. I wasn't sad and then was like, I need to get out of this. Young mummy. It just happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I get like wanting to hold on to the thing you do, if it's, especially if it's making you a living, but I think it's kind of an old wives' tale.
Well, it seems like you've moved on from this like place where you were in this short doc called Laughing Matters that, you know, talks about the terrible mental health stories of comedians. And one of your opening lines is, well, you know, if we're clear about things or if we have clarity, maybe clarity is misery if we have clarity about the world. And so for me, that's like George Carlin, it's Hannah Gadsby, it's Marc Maron. And then you have this whole thing in the present piece about, you know, comedians and sports professionals being psychopaths and drug addicts, artists as well.
And inventors.
And inventors. And it seems like there's a kind of clarity that we pay your class of people for, whether we see the cost of it or not, whether we know or whether we care that it's driving you into the ground. But it sounds like you might be free of that a little bit.
Yeah. And now I could say like, I was a psychopath, now I'm a drug addict. However you want to square it. I just like use it for upkeep every couple months. Mm-hmm. The thing that writes the jokes, what Stephen King calls the boys in the basement.
Yeah.
I just think it's going to happen regardless. In some ways, people are trying to justify negative thought patterns. Cause I think people don't want to change. See, I see the truth and you can't see it, man. And it's like, obviously they see it too. Cause they're laughing. I get to see Young Mummy before everyone. I say it and you go, he does look like a young mummy. So, and it didn't require pain to get there unless you consider the odyssey of the ayahuasca and DMT painful, which it really was, but it was also, I was reconstituted in a better way, or as it is known in the world of conspirituality, integration.
You had a great awakening. You know, I can't help but think of the Tom Waits line, if I exercise my demons, my angels might leave too. And it sounds like you're saying that's a rationalization for people not wanting to just deal.
Yep. It's all rationalizations of just, I don't want to. It's like, most of the anti-vax stuff was just laziness. And was like, there's a risk in putting a new needle. A buddy of mine had a really good observation that ended up being true. He said, the thing that they're not talking about in this is like, a lot of people are just afraid of needles and don't want to admit it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And statistically, it was borne out in a study.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you said upkeep regarding psychedelics, that's an interesting one. I remember Alan Watts writing, when you get the message, hang up the phone. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm someone who did psychedelics over 150 times, so they were a very big part of my life for a while. It's very infrequent now, although I still enjoy them. So when you say you go back for upkeep, is it that you're hitting a ledge and you're going over and you're like, oh, I need to go revisit that place again? What is it serving for you?
It's more, honestly, I say it's upkeep. The great thing that happened for me was once I started doing ayahuasca, mushrooms and MDMA became, when I would take those, it would be very similar to ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. I say upkeep. It does feel good to reconnect with what I interpret as like a central creation force. It is fortifying to me to just remember, like, oh, right. It's a joke, and even it's a thing. It's like Islam has it right where you probably should pray 5 times a day, you know, like just another version of that joke is, or that observation is like, there's churches on every corner because church only lasts about a block. And then you're like back to being like an asshole. And you're like, no, you know what? I'm good. And I'm a vessel for God, and I need to be generous and kind. And then it's in, and then you walk a little bit and you're like, fuck people. And then you get to the next corner. And you're like,
yeah,
you know what? People are good. And I need, you know what I mean? So I see it as a version of that where I think it's a good reminder to do MDMA every 3 months. Obviously it feels, I don't really get like the sexual part of MDMA. So I'm too spiritual, guys. That's my problem.
I think that's a misunderstanding. I don't think there was ever really a sexual part of MDMA. I've heard some people, but I never got that either.
Well, you're too spiritual too, Derek.
I don't think it's a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
No, well, you're too pure, Derek. You're like me. We should exchange emails. And I'll give you my signal because, you know, the government's watching us. I call it upkeep. I could never do it again. I think it's in me enough now that I could function without it.
Yeah.
So when I say upkeep, it's elective. Mm-hmm. But again, that's a thing that I've heard. The thing I'd heard in the ayahuasca world is like, you should do it every 2 months. Mm-hmm. And come here and do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a bit of an ink cartridge situation.
I'll invoke Alan Watts again, because he used to call it spiritual one-upmanship, what you were referencing, which was the ayahuasca circle. I had this. You also talk in your special about trauma flexing, which is kind of similar in that line, because trauma is a real problem for a lot of people. Yet, as you say during the special, it's something physical that can be felt, not something to throw out for any slight affliction on social media.
Well, you know what? There's a bit of a lie there. And here's the lie. they did, well, the lie I told was that trauma is a physical thing. It was considered only a physical thing until 1975. And then the DSM-2 or something, one of them, changed it to kind of anything, which may have been, I've read it sort of couched as a business decision by the DSM. It's like you can get more patients if there's more, if anything can be trauma, and or maybe it's a more generous definition. Hmm. Either way, I think anyone who's aware of social media, TikTok, Instagram, sees it like, well, this is just another, it's almost like a dance trend, mm-hmm. where you just go like gaslighter, narcissistic. You just say all the things mm-hmm. that your boyfriend was, your boss was, your ex, your whoever. You seem cool and you seem in the know about mental health stuff, and you seem empathetic and you seem like an ally. You seem like all the things you're supposed to seem, but mostly it's just for that purpose, to be seen, to appear as a righteous person. Mm-hmm. You don't, most of the people aren't experiencing real trauma. You're not going to put, you know, subtitles and music under it. They're just, if they are, they're, the way they're dealing with it isn't going to be very helpful to them if they're just making it a show where they just cry on Instagram or TikTok.
You know, I had a thought about that, which is that part of that joke rides on juxtaposing the kind of goofy millennial or Gen Z woman with, I think you gave the example of the World War II vet.
Yes.
Who was never able to say a word about the mindless slaughter that completely shattered his brain. Mm-hmm. But I have this sense that there's this intergenerational relationship between tortured silence in one generation and awkward oversharing in the other. And so I'm wondering if, like, you know, is it possible that the younger person is at least starting to explore
yeah.
what our grandparents couldn't? They might be doing it in part because our grandparents couldn't do it.
I don't think there's that. I don't think they're thinking that deeply into it. I don't think there's any. They may pick that up now.
Because of me?
Yes, because of you, Matthew. You square. You're still a square. Don't think I forgot you. There is a part of me that there was a tag that I never did, which is like, yeah, you should, you know. And then they came home and slowly drank themselves to death.
Exactly.
Like they were experiencing trauma and they said nothing. Mm. Now, I'm still a mental health advocate, right? The things that were most effective for me were ayahuasca and DMT. No one can sell that story, really. No one can really benefit from it. It's not like a therapy story. I did a lot of other EMDR. I did transcranial magnetic stimulation. I did ketamine. I did a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
Ayahuasca and DMT were more helpful by, you know, tenfold. So I think that there might be a net positive with the amount of sharing going on now. I think like it is a lot less stigmatized, but it's now crossed into trivialized. I'm not making fun of people talking about trauma. I'm making fun of people commodifying it for views and follows, similarly to the way you guys are on your wonderful podcast, Conspirituality. Join the Patreon, yeah. guys, is my point.
Yeah, it's a really hard line to walk and to understand, too, that the influencer, whoever it is, may not see where that edge is either. Like they might be driving out of like an actual earnest need to explore a kind of language that is new to them. And yeah, then they have tools for commodifying it in the same way that, you know, as you're saying, we're doing in this space as well. And so it's this mixture of earnestness meeting audience capture plus the algorithm plus what becomes more resonant with more people. Very strange, strange landscape.
Yeah. And I don't know what it's another Supreme Court thing where it's like, right now it's 5-4 in favor of it being a good thing, but that could swing if one of these justices dies in my head Like it could just, because there are days where I'm like, this is bullshit and people are not
right.
This is doing more harm than good. Mm-hmm. Or it's not doing, but it's just trivializing a serious, like in cases, a life and death thing, you know, for certain people and making it, they just bullshitify it.
Yeah. The concept I've heard to describe this culturally is concept creep.
Yeah.
Where a concept has a particular meaning. And then over time, as it becomes used more widely in a more popular kind of way, especially on the internet, it can start to shade over into, you know, meaning things that are a lot less, accurate.
Yeah. It happens with everything. So you hope that it helps the people it can help. And the people that are bullshitting just come and go like day traders, mm-hmm. or, you know what I mean? Or like any sort of like new job, life coaches, just any newfangled made up thing that they just go, oh, that's a cool thing. Now I'm going to go do that.
Yeah. NFT people.
NFT people, people who make travel videos, who all use that same vague electronic song underneath them doing backflips off a ledge.
Well, let's get into why you're actually here. What is your problem with Wells Fargo, Neil?
I should reveal why. This came about because I'm a big fan of the podcast and you guys were slamming somebody, maybe Huberman, talking about the green SG1. What is it?
AG1.
Athletic Greens.
Highly likely.
And then literally while I was, the next commercial that came on the podcast was for Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
And it was like, and I was like, I literally thought I was like, I had to like, look like, is this the same?
Am I having a DMT flashback?
Yeah. Are the DMTs back? And then I emailed you guys a furious email. No, I just said like, I don't even know what I said, but it was just sort of like, hey, I just, as a viewer, it's a little inconsistent. And Matthew was raised Catholic, guys, and he knows about hypocrisy. So I thought I would strike a nerve with him. It seemed a little hypocritical. The most fined bank in America.
Yeah. And I wrote right back to you. I said, yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah.
We're with a platform. We don't make all of the decisions, all of this stuff. But
and you said that you were going to transfer Derek and Julian to a different podcast and so that they didn't have to get, they couldn't get prosecuted in the county, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. But you know, it wasn't a furious email. You actually reached out to apologize because you had mentioned it in some offhand way on Mark Maron's show. And I haven't even heard it. So,
oh, that's what it was. Yeah. It hasn't, I don't think it's aired yet.
You said something, it made you feel a little bit, you know, bad or something like that. I thought it was a really like classy thing to do to reach out and say, hey, I did this and this is why, and maybe you should reconsider your advertising, I don't know, portfolio.
Well, no, I wasn't even saying reconsider your advertising. It was just like, I did have a problem with it. It was on my mind that day and I did Marin and I said it and then I was, and then I realized that Neil, jokes have consequences. So I had I looked deep within.
Was that a new realization for you? Like,
hell no. No, I've been hurting people a long time, believe me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, I didn't want to just like broadside you guys or blindside you guys and light into you. Cause I am a legitimately big fan of the podcast. Not like big fan. Like, no, I'm not, I don't Patreon it, but I get it off Apple podcasts.
We appreciate it. Now, I'll just say from our perspective as three people who predominantly survive doing this work financially and emotionally, it's always a challenge. I've been in journalism for 31 years and the sort of trade-offs that you have to make to be able to do media and do journalism are always difficult. As the guys will tell you, I was a holdout on even doing ads, and I'm glad we did because it allows us to be able to continue to do this work. But that said, we are able to sometimes say, hey, no to the supplements deal, because some supplements companies have come for us and been like, no, we're not taking that money. But unfortunately, like some banks do slip in.
And the thing that came to mind when you said that in one of the emails was like, a lot of people are doing the same calculus. A lot of the people that you're assailing on the podcast are, we all have to make a living. And that's part of my issue with some of the ayahuasca-esque world, the conspirituality world, is like once people start, they quit their day job to focus on life coaching or focus on just having an ayahuasca center or whatever, everything gets perverted.
Totally.
So what I'm saying is you guys have to stop doing the podcast or stop doing advertising.
Got it. Got
become
it.
Ayahuasca coaches.
Yes.
That's where we're going. Coaches.
Yes. With no ads. No, look, we always appreciate input like that. And it was really class of you to do that, to reach out and let us know.
By the way, you don't have to appreciate it. You can find it incredibly aggravating and presumptuous. Like,
no.
I'm not of the world that like we all have to handle things well. I don't handle many things well.
But we don't. And in fact, to people who are listening, if you ever hear an ad and you're like, that seems fishy, reach out to us, because we actually do have some ability to say, oh, by the way, this one slipped through that was on our list of categories of ads that we are not comfortable running, and please take it off immediately. And they do that for us.
Right. But there's also one like the meat one. I'm vegan.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I just go, I don't, it's bad for the environment. I don't care how ethical the meat is. Mm-hmm. And again, I direct Corona commercials, so I don't have a pot to piss in on this. We're all sort of betraying our inner values in some way. It's just, obviously it's a matter of degree, but that's the risk you guys run of being sort of a ethical watchman.
Yeah.
Again, which may preclude advertising, and then you can't do the podcast as well. Like,
yeah,
there's all these mechanisms that like if thens, and I don't have an answer, but all I do know is that I did shit on you on Marin.
Yes.
And that's the important
part. And that's probably a high point in our career. Part. That's probably a high point for us.
I can only imagine the thrill. You guys are going to all pull over.
It will be.
Make your kids listen to it. Can you believe it? Me on Mark Marin.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. These two guys were talking about us. Do you know how famous they are?
Yeah.
You know, I think the thing for us, like you're probably listening to the Andrew Huberman episode. So for us, when you have someone like Andrew Huberman, who the podcast is called Andrew Huberman Lab, he rests on the laurels of his academic credentials and the fact that he's involved in a research facility to whatever extent he really is. And then he turns to the camera and endorses AG1 as having all these benefits, which are not at all supported by science. And behind the scenes, he's getting millions of dollars from that kind of endorsement because of his profile and his qualifications. That's something I'm really comfortable critiquing.
Now do Wells Fargo.
Well, why don't you do Wells Fargo?
What I'm saying is that your brand is ethical rectitude. That's sort of what you're trafficking
in. Yeah, and cultural criticism.
Yeah, it's cultural, but it's not, it's cultural, but it's like,
I don't know that it's general. Is it general ethical rectitude, or is it a critique of a certain kind of conspiratorial?
Yeah, I think you're policing people,
pseudoscience, conspiracy theories, cults.
Yeah, yes. And again, I like it. I'm not saying this is like, I didn't just like stumble on it. Yeah. I really like it, and I think it's necessary, but the part of people advertising on our podcast is that you create a brand, and if you guys say Wells Fargo's good, and again, you didn't do the ad, it was inserted, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But if you guys say that Wells Fargo, the understanding is there's some ethics here. I don't think that's why Wells Fargo chose you. I'm sure it was relatively all automated. So again, I'm not saying change anything.
Sure.
I'm just saying that's what me and Marin were talking about advertising on podcasts.
Yeah.
So I didn't just go like, Mark, before we start, can I just shit on this podcast?
No, totally. It makes sense. I think it's an interesting conversation.
Yeah. And again, you guys made a 5-4 decision, I'm assuming.
Totally.
Yeah.
Or 3-2-1 or whatever the majority rule was, you guys made it, and I'm not mad at it. I'm not even asking you guys to have empathy for a Huberman as a fellow hypocrisy sniffer.
Yeah.
I was just like, huh.
Yeah, it was jarring to you. I totally get it.
Traumatized.
Traumatized. Ah, yes, you were traumatized. We will await your Instagram reel about it.
Uh-huh.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Hey, do you have trouble sleeping? Then maybe you should check out the Sleepy Podcast. It's a show where I read old books in the public domain to help you get to sleep. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of classic stories like A Tale of Two Cities, Pride and Prejudice, Winnie the Pooh. Stories that are great for adults and kids alike. For years now, Sleepy has helped millions of people catch some much-needed Z's, start their next day off fresh, and discover old books that they didn't know they loved. So, whether you have a tough time snoozing or you just like a good bedtime story, fluff up the cool side of your pillow and tune into Sleepy. Unless you're driving, then please don't listen to Sleepy. Find Sleepy on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes each week. Sweet dreams.
So look, Neil, as someone on the inside of the comedy world, here's how I see it. Like, free speech politics ended up intersecting with COVID and other culture war issues over the last several years within the comedy community. Like, do you have observations about that? Does that sound accurate?
Sure don't. I'm kidding. Well, yeah, if we want to remain in COVID, that's one thing. Here's what I believe happened, and this is in a bigger way. In the 70s, 80s, 90s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, clergy fell. Ask me and Matthew about that. And that's not just Catholicism. It's more or less every religion. The more transparent the world got, the more revealed everyone got. So it's like clergy are pedophiles a lot of times. Boy Scout leaders, politicians are all on the dole. It's one form or another. The simplest law in the world would take $30 million to get past the United States Senate. So I made that number up, but it seems credible. Clergy, politicians gone. Media, they're wrong so much. Like a pretty big thing like the Iraq invasion. And then you find out all of the steps of they're just laundering White House talking points for access journalism. They're doing it to sell ads. They're doing it for clicks. So everyone has sort of fallen off. Into the breach comes Jon Stewart, Michael Moore, South Park, Chappelle, Rock, Jim Jefferies, Bill Burr. I mean, and they're not all. And then Joe and then podcast started. And I would put Joe in the category of comedian. And what I say in the special is that there's all these serious issues, like, say, transgender. Finally, people were like, well, what do the clowns think? Mm-hmm. The fact that people are asking what comedians think is a failure of other categories, right? And this isn't just a cop-out. I say this as, like, I've worked on The Daily Show. I've known Jon Stewart 30 years. I co-created Chappelle Show. I have very much considered the moral implications of mass communications, right? And I don't think it should be our job. It's like blaming the landscaper for the Hurricane Katrina flooding. It's like, no, this is the Army Corps of Engineers. This is environmental erosion. This happened. We're like technically, yeah, the landscape looks bad. I will admit that, but it's because of all these failures before the landscaper, you know? And that's how I feel as a comedian. I know, like, Jon Stewart, from what I've heard, dealt with the implications of actually kind of being a credible news person. So I think maybe the first 5 or 6 years he was like, I'm on after robots. Mm-hmm. Why do I have to deal with this? And so they brought on a fact checker and I don't know, maybe he may have been there before, but that's what I'd heard. Mm-hmm. So there, like I said, worked at the Daily Show, and there was a thing of like, do we mean that? Even like a Trump joke. I remember me and Michelle Wolf pitched a joke about Melania, and they were like, yeah, but that could be interpreted as like, she's like a, you know, prostitute. And me and Michelle were like, yeah, that's how we meant it.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't do the joke because they were like, well, we don't want to say she's a prostitute. I've seen like ethical decisions made, and there were 100 of those a day on the Daily Show. I've seen, me and Dave have discussed it at length in terms of Chappelle's show. The stuff he says now, I don't agree with, but whatever. I don't agree with. I've been arguing with Dave for 30 years. It's just like now the last couple of years, other people have joined me. It's like, oh, this is, I've been arguing with this guy. Like, it's not even like, oh, are you? It's like, yeah, it's just a guy that you argue with. I don't see it as like, mm-hmm. what is happening? And the fact that he has such power is like, it's not, no one moves out to LA to be, you know, righteous or kind or informationally sober mm-hmm. or, you know, like people move out here to be funny and famous. Mm-hmm. I put Joe in that category. I put like a lot of people that I've known. And again, I've known him a long time, so I remember.
I think the Daily Show is a really interesting example, right? Because it sort of bears out what you're saying, where I think for people of a certain age, the Daily Show became what they relied on to get their news. They were sick of watching the cable news cycle, and they're like, let's just go to Jon Stewart and let Jon Stewart tell us what the news is and put his very intelligent, sarcastic kind of spin on it. That's going to make us laugh, but we'll also kind of know what's going on in the world. I feel like why are people asking the clowns? Okay. And then you get into podcast territory. And I feel like there's a thing that happens with podcasts around free speech, like 2014, 2015. And eventually we get to COVID where, you know, you were just on Rogan and you were saying to him kind of gently, I really appreciated the way you were doing it, like trying to raise some issues with him of saying, I almost heard you saying to him, you kind of contribute to what's going on in our fractured discourse right now by putting stuff out there that isn't really fact-checked, by sort of encouraging and propagating some of these more conspiratorial interpretations of things, right?
Yeah. And that's a different, that's a tactical conversation about like, I don't believe that any liberal politician knows how to talk to people. Mm. I think that they don't know how to dress. John Fetterman has the right idea, and now he's going more and more to the center. Mm. But like, that's who people will vote for. That stop it with these tailored suits and these you know, like your ivory tower and being like, I pity you, you're disgusting, and I expect you to vote for me. Mm-hmm. It's just a horrible approach. And I think when I deal with my friends that are more conservative or literally Joe Rogan, the approach has to be, hey man, I don't know. Cause I don't think screaming helps. And I don't think sometimes I don't think facts help. I think it's just like, what is it? What's going to persuade people? Mm-hmm. That's the, you know, what's funny about, you know, people talk about the civil rights movement as the most effective social movement in world history. And it was real. It was very designed, you know, like what are we going to wear? Are we going to be violent? Are we? And like, how are we going to persuade people? And I think now there's a thing on the left where it's such, people are so high on their own righteousness that they don't think they should have to persuade people, that it's beneath them. And the thing I would say is like, Martin Luther King was offering God and heaven. What are we offering? Because we don't even believe in God anymore. So it's like, what are we offering people? And then, and my buddy Kurt Metzger says, the liberals offer being on the right side of history. Wow. Mm-hmm. The right side of history. What?
I'll take socialized medicine. I'll start there.
No, I'm not. Again,
if that was what was being offered.
Right. But I'm saying the right. But again, in order to get it, you have to persuade people.
Oh, sure, sure.
And like Obamacare was an act of persuasion that I almost feel like people don't have the stomach for anymore. I don't politically, I think Obama's very good, but I'm saying like it's around, you know, in 16 through 20, it just became like, this is, you know, Trump, the Trumps of the world are so morally noxious that to even, I shouldn't even have to stoop to persuade you.
Yeah.
And I can't even fathom that you'd like him.
This is what I really appreciated about, you know, sticking it out through the 2.5 hours of your appearance on Rogan, because for the, it's kind of embodied the entire issue, because there's 2 hours of, you know, your friends chiding each other from opposing sides of the, you know, science, evidence, pseudoscience fence. And that is where all of the confusion kind of festers. I think you called on Jamie about 8 times to look up like how much fentanyl was in, you know, George Floyd's bloodstream and stuff like that. And so what is this space in which we're kind of in somebody's garage, not really be getting clear about what happened or what the fluoride in the water means. And then it changed. You got to the 2 hour mark. And I don't know whether you asked him first or he asked said me, something first.
He asked me about getting, he gets anxious at night.
That's right. That's right.
Yes. Yes. So he admitted he got anxious most nights when stoned. Now I don't listen to this guy. I don't know if this is a rare admission, but that got you into this more vulnerable friendship territory. And so you're empathizing with him, but you're also describing your own spiritual hope. So there's 2 hours of, I don't know what it is. It's kind of filler. And then 30 minutes of connection.
It's filler to you, but it's like to most people, it's that for a lot of people, that's what they like about the show.
And maybe it's not filler for you either, because I think you're actually warming up to this actual moment.
I don't go in with a plan. I have.
Well, that's obvious. Right,
I have often given updates about my mental health on his show, which I made a joke about.
And yeah,
but also like ayahuasca, and if you YouTube ayahuasca and depression, me on Rogan's the first thing that comes up. So I know that it's like relevant to people that need help. So I now it's just like kind of a segment. Like we talk about mental health, but but yeah, it's like you can't go in with a plan. It's literally two guys hanging out. That's the appeal of the show, which is what makes the thing of like, we need Joe to be informationally, you know, upright.
Well, this is what I'm getting to is that like for the first time, I think I hear Rogan as many hear him, a concerned friend or somebody who has that capacity. He can listen, he can disclose things. But to me, it makes things even more complicated, because what happens when that warmth and that, you know, I'm just a guy quality makes his thoughts, his off the cuff thoughts on vaccines or his guests' thoughts on drag queens seem more reasonable, right? It's like there's this double-edged thing. Like it was a great moment listening to that half hour where I'm like, wow, I'm hearing something real happen between two human beings. But then the surrounding context is like...
And just for insight, if people don't want to listen, there was just kindness and empathy both ways.
Yeah, exactly.
About mental health.
Yes, yes. And it was kind of extraordinary.
And concern and tenderness.
Yeah. And it was actually really, really sweet. It was really encouraging to listen to. And it's like, I'm like, more of that. And I'm also worried a little bit. It's like, is that then the delivery device for, you know, sort of swimming around in, you know, Jamie, what is, you know, we're good guys here.
This is a bone. I actually have a bone to pick with you guys about this. Are you guys aware of this thing called apophenia?
Yes.
So I feel like sometimes you guys have apophenia.
Yep.
Apophenia, the definition of apophenia is seeing patterns where there are none.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's QAnon sort of stock and trade.
Yeah.
Like if you see people like doing the OKs and whatever, any of that stuff. I didn't even want to make the symbol.
Well, it's the map. It's the map. Everything is connected.
Right. So, and apophenia is a mental illness where you're seeing connections that are not there. And I feel like there are times, because I know Joe personally, and you're ascribing some motive to him that you called him a Christian nationalist a few weeks ago. And it was after I said, like, I'm friends with you. I'm friends with him. He doesn't have a plan. And you guys still like, well, we have a podcast where we call people Christian nationalists. So like, fuck the facts, Neil. Fuck the boots on the ground 30-year relationship. We decided that this guy might be a Christian nationalist, and we're just floating that idea.
No, I'm going to go on the record and say
floating that idea. Okay.
Joe Rogan is definitely not a Christian nationalist. I'm 100% sure Joe Rogan is not a Christian nationalist. Okay.
You're thinking about the bonus.
Okay, well, didn't you float the idea that he was doing it? He was parroting white Christian national talking points for his viewership?
No, what we were saying was there's a pattern of a number of significant influencers who are making confessions of faith right
there's
now.
There's a pattern. I'm absolutely right so far. Go on.
But if you see a trend, you see a trend. Like, you've got Russell Brand, you've got Huberman. Who was the other one, Derek? There was four, right?
No, there's three.
There was three. And then there's Peterson, right? And it's like, okay, if something gets into the water where suddenly the infosphere erupts with a number of people getting to sort of like the end point, perhaps, of their influence, which has got to be God, what's happening? That's what the reflection was about. It wasn't Joe Rogan's a Christian nationalist. It's like,
right, but I'm telling you, that joke, I made that same joke on The Daily Show 3 years ago. It was Republicans need Jesus. And I went through it that they need Jesus. It was like, and why are you of all people saying they need Jesus? He was just making the joke, which is the thing I emailed you guys. I was like, he's not a Christian nationalist. He's making a joke. And then you did it again. And I was like, oh, these guys are apophaniacs.
No, that you mean liar. You mean liar.
Well, yeah, I hate to put that. Well, it's not even a liar. It's just I find the bias of journalism is, I don't know, man. I set up a whole framework around this.
Sure.
So I don't want to. I pitched it to my editor. Let me just get this story out. And I really respect journalism legitimately, and like donate to fucking ProPublica and all that shit. So what I'm saying is, but my experience of journalism, where it is very human and very biased, is, come on, man. I got to get this story out.
I just want to see the quote where one of us said that Joe Rogan's a Christian nationalist, because I don't recall this.
Christian nationalism is a specific form of Christianity geared toward taking over the government. We never made that claim about Joe Rogan. Talking about God and some sort of coming to Jesus moment, we did reference, but we never made that claim about Christian nationalism.
I'm not on here to defend. I came on this podcast to defend Joe and attack your advertising
scheme. That was your plan. I thought you had plan.
I know. I had a plan for this one. Lesson learned.
Well, hold on a second, because I think part of what's also going on is that during that period, we're looking at people like Russell Brand, who in a moment of intense media crisis suddenly starts talking about Christianity. And I think that who was it who went on Rogan and had a similar moment?
I don't know specifically. Well, definitely wasn't my episode, because I don't fucking work for your podcast.
No.
Yes, that's a thing people do. I've seen that, but Joe's not very tactical. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm sorry to tell you, he's just not tactical in that regard. If he is, he's a genius at hiding it. Because again, I know firsthand that guy's got the biggest podcast on earth. You know how you get on it? You text him and say, hey man, I'm going to be in Austin on Thursday. And then he texts you back. There's not a team. There's not a, I'm running this Christian nationalist narrative right now, Neil, so you're not going to fit in. It's just like, no. Hey man, come by. And I say that as someone who was on one of his first 20 episodes. Totally. And his 2000th. There's no overarching framework. If he's becoming, like I said, if he's becoming more Republican, that sort of money will do that to you.
Yeah.
I just saw some apophenia, and I saw a pattern, and maybe I'm an apophenic, and I have apophenia for apophenia.
You are 100% right that doing what we do, that is an occupational hazard. So your critique is well taken.
I'm raising a lot of good questions, guys, and that's all I'm here to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I report, they decide.
In that Laughing Matters documentary, Baron Vaughn says, anxiety is our creative talent, and it sounds like you have softened that up quite a bit. That's not really what's beating you over the head anymore. But I'm wondering, in that comedic space where you're doing these podcasts, you're speaking with Maron, you're speaking with Rogan, is there a kind of anxiety about the world that you're all trying to deal with? And is that kind of a doorway through which, you know, the conspiratorial mind can take root or blossom?
I think the thing that maybe you guys are underappreciate, or I think people in general may underappreciate, is, you know, a bigger thread in anyone I know, comedian, artist, et cetera, I would say their number one thing is ambition, and it's status. And it even goes to the people, all the trauma flexors on Instagram and TikTok. They want status, you know, they want, whether it's clicks, money, whatever. And I say this about Ellen, Dave, you know, the biggest, the small, they just want status. And I think the mental illness part, most of these people are way more ambitious than they are depressed or anxious. And I put myself in that category. Like, even part of the reason I did three mics was because I wasn't getting much traction just doing stand-up. And it wasn't even that conscious, but it was a thing of like, what am I doing what could I do differently? And I was like, I think the problem is I'm not very likable, and I should explain to people why that is. And that's sort of the impetus for the show, for three mics. Now I'm just pure likability. So I don't have to do any emo stuff, but I'm saying, like, and I didn't use mental health as a crutch because I didn't think it would work, but I didn't really think about it. I just thought, like, that's a different thing to do. And I did it for status. And here's the good and bad news. I got more status from it. And I think that's the thing. That's sort of the secret sauce of anybody. And that goes to that inventors and athletes thing, is it's all status seeking. And I would almost argue that, man, I haven't listened to every episode, but like, most of the people you're covering are just seeking status.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Conspirituality. We'll see you here on the main feed next week or over on Patreon.